Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cosmic Citizen Radio. This is your host, Crystal and Beek Larson, and we have on the air today a very special guest by the name of Donald Ware. And are you with us, Don? We have had some technical problems this morning, and we're hoping that Paula will be joining us shortly. Paula, are you here?
Hi, Crystal, and I'm here. I've got Donald. Let me patch him through. Hold on.
Okay. Anyway,
Donald, are you with us?
This is wonderful new technology. We just have some problems once in a while, so thanks for bearing with us.
Don,
I'm
are
here.
You
Hi, Don.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, great. We made it. You know, I don't know, did you explain to everyone that my computer died this morning? It won't turn on.
We have had our challenges.
Oh, my gosh. But we're all here. Christy, thanks for picking up the ball and running with it. That is great.
No problem.
So our guest today is Donald Ware. Donald, you have a tremendous experience with the UFO community, and in fact, you were deeply involved with the UFO phenomena long before you found the Urantia book. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct. I've been a truth seeker since I had a personal experience in 1952, so that's about 58 years, and I actually bought the Urantia book in 1990 at a UFO conference. And it wasn't until 10 years later when I was directed in my meditation for New Year's resolutions to move that book from the bottom to the top of my stack and don't read any other book till I finish it cover to cover.
Wow.
My only regret is I didn't do it sooner.
What happened to you in 1952 that caused you to start seeking the truth?
I was 16 years old, walking down the street, blocked from my home in Arlington, Virginia, and saw seven red light type UFOs wandering around over the Capitol and over the Pentagon. They put on a demonstration that the media couldn't ignore and the government couldn't cover up. I think, just to raise people's consciousness a little bit that we are not alone.
And now, was this covered by the media at all?
Oh, yeah. And the term flying saucer showed up in headlines around the world two Sunday mornings in a row. That's correct.
So this was in addition to Roswell, which we know obviously made big news.
Yeah, that was 5 years earlier, right.
That was 5 years earlier. So there was a period of time where this was commonly in the national news.
There is a program to keep the general public from getting too excited about the alien presence. So most UFO stories were covered in local news but not allowed in the national news where too many people could get excited about it. And there has been an ongoing covert educational program, a controlled disclosure program, been going on for 5 or 6 decades now. And consequently, they feel they are allowed to bring more important information into the open public. But yes, we sent 12 of our Air Force officers to another planet on an alien vehicle in 1965. 8 of them came back in 1978. And for those people who are familiar with the Georgia Guidestones and might remember what the first guide says, that have been carved in granite on these 19-foot obelisks on the highest point in Elberton County, Georgia, since 1980, it says, maintained humanity at 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Now, that scares the devil out of a lot of people.
Now you're getting ahead of me.
Yeah. What,
so let's just say this.
Is that either.
Yeah, when you realize that 1980 was 2 years after our 8 Air Force officers came back from that alien planet, where they were told it was about the same size as the Earth and had 500 million people on it in perpetual balance of nature. That's why that first guidestone says that. So I just wanted to pass that on because a lot of people don't connect those dots.
Now, the
tells
guide-
me that R.C. Christian, who is the guy responsible for putting up the Georgia Guidestones, who said he was a member of a small group of world citizens, had access to those returned Air Force officers.
So now, this is all news to me. I didn't know that any Air Force officers ever went to another planet or any. This is something I've never heard, and I've heard a lot of things from the UFO community. I've spent a lot of time talking to people within the MUFON and various things. I've even spoken at one of their conferences, but this is news to me. Now, give us a little bit of your background, Donald. I really would appreciate that. I know you served in the United States Air Force. You were a lieutenant colonel, right?
Yeah, you know, I went to Duke when I was 17 and I got a degree in mechanical engineering the same time was commissioned in the Air Force. Spent 26 years in the Air Force, retired at age 47 without having to work for a living. So I'd just been working for volunteer organizations and seeking truth and, you know, ever since, for 27 years now, and since 83 when I was officially retired. Briefly, let me follow up a little bit with why you haven't heard about this. It's because a lot of the MUFON people that you talk to are not bold enough to mention the website SCRPO.org, SCRPO.org. But for 4 years now, our Defense Intelligence Agency has been releasing to the public on that website through a school teacher in California, just to make sure everything is in good grammatical order, all the information about, you know, this officer exchange program we had with Zeta Reticulans and many other UFO-related stuff. SERPO.org, if anybody's interested.
S-E-R, can you say
P-O. SERPO.org.
Okay.
You can read for weeks on that website. It's all covertly released stuff.
Well, now you say that the cover-up, and okay, so you're a retired Air Force officer.
Yes, retired Air Force officer, lieutenant colonel.
Okay, and I'm going to just be, I'm going to very basic.
And I have a master's in nuclear engineering also.
Okay. You're highly qualified, let's just say that. I mean,
well, I've got a good scientific, I purposely knew my interest in UFOs would lead me to research after I retired. So when I was at AFID, I took courses in electric propulsion systems and physics of the upper atmosphere and materials courses, and that has been helpful in my research.
Now, and would you say that this experience you had when you were 16 has kind of guided you from here on out? I mean, was that maybe a capstone experience for you where...
One of many, but yeah, you know, I'm going to get real bold and say that I have at least one thing in common with Dr. Sadler. We're both serious truth seekers.
Okay.
Now, I have held truth seeker meetings in my living room the first Saturday of every month I've been in town since 1983. Dr. Sadler held what I call truth seeker meetings in his living room at 533 Diversity in Chicago every Sunday afternoon from 1924 to 1942. And I've got a master's in nuclear engineering. I think Dr. Sadler had three PhDs as a medical doctor, a philosopher, and one in theology or divinity or something. So these were highly qualified people that because of their exploration of truth were chosen by, well, I'll call them higher intelligence, to make the Urantia book happen. My group has not been charged to do anything similar, but I have personally been receiving for 17 years tasking messages from someone using the name Adam, and I'm recently suspecting that it's the same Adam that's still married to Eve, and sits on that council of 20 and 4 that is managing the transformation of this planet from the star system headquarters.
Okay, well, let's start out with some basic assumptions here. And
okay.
There's no doubt in anyone's mind that's listening, there's no doubt in my mind that you believe in this phenomenon and you've experienced it. You're basing a lot of it on personal experience. You're basing it a lot of it on the experience you've had meeting other people.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've lectured all over the world. You're really an expert, in my opinion. You're an expert on this phenomenon.
And I tell people that the Urantia book is the most important book ever printed and will be a primary text throughout the first 100 years or two of the Golden Age. That's my personal opinion.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think we, Crystalline and I, would absolutely agree with you there, and I know most of our listeners would probably agree with you, too, if they've read the Urantia book. And the thing that's unique about it, and I'm just going to back up a little bit to the 1930s when the Urantia book came through, before a lot of this was commonly held or commonly believed, the Urantia book was talking about trillions, literally trillions of inhabited worlds. And it was it told us very blatantly that there were three in our solar system that could sustain life. That's a hint. It also tells us very blatantly that there is one planet in close proximity to us that has non-breathers on it. It tells us that there are three types of breathers, sub-breathers, and non-breathers. It tells us there are three brain types, one brain, two brain, and three brains. It tells us a great deal about the inhabited worlds, about life on other worlds. It tells us that we're living in a universe and a universe of universes that is teeming, literally teeming with intelligent life. It explains why we would ever imagine that we are alone in the universe, that we've
mm-hmm.
isolation. So the fact that that this community of people who believe in UFOs comes along is no big surprise to any of us who read the Urantia book. And in fact, we know that a great percentage of the population of this planet now believes that there is life on other planets. Do they think that we could be visited? That's another question. I don't know. And I think that that's probably something that comes to a lot of your Rancho book readers, too, is, you know, yeah, we know there's life on other planets, but why are they coming here? So there's a big question, I'm sure, Don. Why are they coming here? Have they said why they're coming here?
I can shed some light on that, but it'll take a while. Let me start off by saying the Rancho book says that John the Baptist is currently sitting in the rotating chair of that council of 20 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
We all know the Bible says that John the Baptist incarnated for the purpose of preparing the way for Jesus's bestowal or Michael's bestowal on this planet as Jesus. I'm convinced now that John the Baptist sits in that head chair so that he can help prepare the way for the second coming of Christ on this planet.
Wow.
Which I think is going to happen soon, and all the people I know associated with world government also think that's going to happen soon.
That's an amazing statement.
And that's why things are speeding up.
And what makes you think that is going to happen soon? What have been some of the experiences you've had or that other people in your group have had that would indicate this?
Well, one is the hybridization program. You know, we had at the UB The News conference, I think it was June of this year in Boulder, a long discussion on eugenics. I highly recommend people, if they might want to get that report that Howard Katzen put out. It's 87 pages on eugenics, and it has in the back something that I have copies of and make copies for distribution to people that I think would be interested. It's the last 11 pages. It's titled Appendix 1, Your Rancho Book-Based Taxonomy. If you read what the Rancho book says in those 11 pages from that are in this attachment, which is just what it is, what the Rancho book says, you will see that many times in those papers, let's say paper number 60 to 63, which is Urantia during the early land-based era, the mammalian era on Urantia, the dawn races of early man, the first human family. Many times in those four papers, it talks about twins that suddenly appeared. And they put the word suddenly in italics. What that really means is that there was genetic engineering. It didn't happen through normal evolution, which takes a long time. It's genetic engineering that caused those twins that were more advanced, greater capacity for intellectual growth and spiritual awareness to appear. Right now, I know many, many people who have twins, but one of them was removed from the womb before they were born, but there's a strong connection, a strong mental and emotional connection between them and their twin who is elsewhere. It's really interesting to see how much of that stuff is going on in the UFO community that you don't hear about. But, you know, there have been two books written about it, one by Carol Dennis, I think, one by Robin Andrews in Atlanta, about the missing twin syndrome. And it's really interesting stuff when you combine what you learn in the UFO community with what you learn in the Rancho book.
So let's get back to the reason they're here. You think you're essentially getting at the point that you believe, as someone who's deeply involved in this, the UFO phenomenon, the UFO community, that extraterrestrial visitors of the material type, now obviously not mm-hmm. a celestial type, because we know that the Rancho book says there are celestial beings here all the time, and that there is a seraphic planetary government, a government of spiritual beings on this planet, and they're in operation, and they're, you know, working overtime, obviously, to help bring us back on course. You know,
right.
This world is off course. So essentially what you're saying is they have a material counterpart that is working also to upstep the eugenics of humankind. In other words, and just a little background for our listeners, the Urantia book says that Adam and Eve came here on a genetic mission, and their mission was twofold. It was obviously to upstep all the systems of the human race, all of the evolutionary systems, the system of government, religion, all the human systems, but especially the biologic system, so that had they lived and completed their mission, we would have been much better biologically. We would have been genetically upstepped.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be so susceptible to disease, and a lot of the things that plague us now wouldn't necessarily have happened. So, Don, what you're saying then is that there's some mission afoot to get that back, that genetic upstep?
That's correct. The phrase used in the Urantia book concerning Adam and Eve's genetic mission is to upgrade our capacity for intellectual growth and spiritual awareness. This thing we call a brain is a biological computer. And anybody knows anything about computers knows you got to periodically upgrade them. As we join a galactic society, which we're in the process of doing right now and have been for several decades, we need that bigger hard drive, the faster chip, and the new USB port for telepathy. We need to learn to communicate the same way they do through the direct projection of thought. These twins I'm talking about, involved in the hybridization program, communicate telepathically with their unseen siblings. It's the way aliens, the difference between an alien and an angel, in my view, is that we're all eternal spiritual beings, but when we're inhabiting a physical body, we tend to call them aliens. If not, we tend to call them angels or messengers.
Okay. So,
go ahead.
You're familiar with the famous abduction cases like the Betty and Barney Andreotti.
Quite familiar with probably all of the abduction cases that have had books written about them. I've got over 700 books in my loaning library. Let me tell you about an email I got this morning. And I put together a few notes in the last hour. But from the shift, I got an email about Barbara Marks Hubbard's latest course, because she's a real truth seeker and a real teacher. Many of the Rancher Book readers might know about Barbara Marks Hubbard. She's about 80 years old now, I think. But she calls it a doctorate in evolutionary awakening, how we can literally birth a new kind of human on planet Earth and out of that create a new society. I think that new society has been referred to as the Golden Age. And the new type of human can be referred to by a number of names, but the name that the world government lawyers have chosen is Homo Alterius Spatialis, meaning
wow.
A higher human from space. And if anybody wants to know what they look like, look up the cover of Time magazine, 23 June 97. I might add that regardless of what the Urantia book says about reincarnation, everybody in our truth seeker group here knew when they started studying the Urantia book, knew that reincarnation was something that happens. And so we questioned that with our access points to higher intelligence. You might call it our contact for our contact group. And they said that 2,000 years ago, people were thinking of reincarnation the way they do in the East. That is, a human soul might reincarnate into a lesser being. And Jesus was actively trying to teach that that didn't happen. You know, nobody could put a hex on you and make you come back as a scorpion or a pig or something like that. But we think of reincarnation as differently now. So, you know, that's confusing to a lot of people. And you have to get accustomed to the idea of reincarnation if you're ever going to be able to connect the dots and make sense out of this magnificent universe out there we have been invited to join.
Well, now, I know, Krislyn, you must be dying to say something, and I'm sure not wanting to hog
this
up.
Well, I'm trying to find some of the websites that you have mentioned.
Yeah, I just tried to find June 23, 1997, the cover of Time, and I'm not having any luck. Maybe you can find it.
I also didn't have any luck. But are you sure that's the right date?
Yeah, 23 June 97, cover of Time magazine. Should you Google Time magazine and go to that date, you'll probably see it.
Okay, it's an archive. I can see it's about Roswell. I'm trying to see if it'll load the cover here for me.
Yeah, see, the Council on Foreign Relations members consist the chairman and a number of members of the board of all the major media. And they essentially decide who gets their face on the cover of Time magazine. This is their way of telling us that this being is somebody special. You have to be special to get your face on the cover of Time magazine. So to put Homo Altera Spacialis, and they don't name it in the magazine, they use that picture to get people's attention to 6 pages of information about the 50th anniversary of the Roswell crash.
Okay.
You know, their policy is not to talk about...
I did get it to pop up.
Yeah.
Too, and I just put the link on the board for our friends who want to go there.
Okay.
Come up if you just search Time magazine cover June 23rd, 1997. That's how I got it to come up.
I want to
back up for a minute,
okay,
because you mentioned reincarnation, and I think we've got to say something here. We have
okay.
to. Your Rancha book clearly refutes it. It says that of all the beliefs, none have harmed humanity more than. In terms of religious beliefs, then this stultifying belief in the endless migration of souls back into wearisome rounds of life as blades of grass or crickets or cows or, it's pretty clear that, as we understand reincarnation, it doesn't exist. And that it was originally a Vedic belief, and
Well, that statement is true, and that's what Jesus was teaching. But that doesn't mean that an eternal spiritual being can only enter a human body to learn certain lessons. And the lessons we, throughout the Aryan age, which is the age we've been living in since the Atlantean age, the reason for being in our physical bodies is to use free will to make choices that polarize our souls towards service to others or service to self. That's a requirement to be sufficiently polarized before you learn to express unconditional love of others. And that's the curriculum in the next age, which we are in the present, presently entering, to learn to express unconditional love of others.
Okay,
that was a message I was given very clearly, personally.
Okay, and the book also states that there's a plan of ascension, that we don't keep recycling onto the same planet over and over again. And I've got the exact quote. It's from, this is from a paper, let me give you the...
And
This is from the section on Brahmanism. And I can't see what paper it's in right now because my settings are off a little bit. But this is what it says. It says, the undue concentration on self led certainly to a fear of the non-evolutionary perpetuation of self in an endless round of successive incarnations as man, beast, or weeds, and of all the contaminating beliefs which could have become fastened upon what may have been an emerging monotheism, none was so stultifying as this belief in transmigration. The doctrine of the doctrine of the reincarnation of souls, which came from the Dravidian Deccan, this belief in the weary and monotonous round of repeated transmigrations robbed struggling mortals of their long-cherished hope of finding that deliverance and spiritual advancement in death which had been a part of their earlier Vedic faith. So yeah, are you saying then that, you know, because the Urantia book really does teach progressive incarnation and ascension.
That's correct. And, you know, that statement is very true and very important. The Urantia book was designed to be a lesson for the entire planet, not just because it came in America. It wasn't just designed for Americans. That's why it's being published in so many different languages now and spread around the world. And the majority of the people that were being held back because of that belief were people in India, where they still held a lot of the, you know, the religious people over there still held the view of what the Urantia book talked about back then in the 30s. But that still doesn't mean that you can fulfill your mission as a human being, a third grade student for the soul, in a short 2-week lifetime as a baby. Now, we all know that what the Urantia book says, we have these mansion schools we go through in Jerusalem at our star system headquarters, and we get through those schools, and then we graduate up to the constellation level on our way to the local universe level, and we eventually go from a Urantia body to a purely spiritual body for our continued evolution and perfection before we can get into paradise. It's a very long road to paradise. But nothing's going to make sense to the real truth seeker if they don't understand that there are literally billions of angels and aliens from all over the universe and perhaps some other galaxies that are here now to assist this planet in the transformation to the next level of evolution for the planet. The planet has been a third-grade classroom for the soul throughout human history. It is in the process of becoming a fourth-grade classroom for the soul, where everybody here will be very unselfish and learning to express unconditional love of others. That's the only thing that's going to keep Homo sapiens from destroying the environment that supports us and all life on the planet. It's a
Bravo,
big deal.
Bravo, well said. I'm given to understand we have a caller. Do we have a caller, Crystalline?
Yeah, I believe we do. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. Very well said.
512, you're on the air.
Hey, y'all. It's Lisa.
512, are you there?
It's Lisa Crow. Can you hear
Hello,
me?
Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey.
Welcome to
you're
our program.
You're on with Wear and I, Matt Crystalline and I.
I can't hear Lisa.
Do you have a comment or question? Hello, Lisa. Are you there?
Oh, she might have
Hello,
lost.
Hello, Lisa, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now we can.
We weren't able to hear you before. Did you have a question or a comment?
No, I don't. Just enjoying. This is fascinating. I'm driving to Dallas, and so I wanted to catch it while I was on the road. But please do continue expounding on your thoughts on reincarnation, because I'm really fascinated.
Well, I'm going to put you on mute then so that we don't get
Great.
The background noise. Okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, sweetie.
Paula, let me mention briefly that link I sent you recently that you shared with Urantia Leadership.
The one
it was an article by Hugh Sun Kim, and I'll spell that, H-U-I. S-U-N-K-I-M. The title of the article was Exopolitics, Earth-Human Interaction with the Rest of the Universe. Your listeners may want to Google that, either Yu Sun Kim or the Exopolitics, Earth-Human Interaction with the Rest of the Universe, and read that article. I think it's worthwhile.
You're right. You know, I actually sent that to some friends, and they know him, the fellow. Some of them know him, the fellow that wrote the article.
Mm-hmm.
Not the fellow that wrote the article, but the fellow the article is about. He wrote a book, and Hugh Sun Kim was kind of doing a review on that. Is that correct?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, and he was actually the attorney for a man years ago who was trying to discredit the Urantia book, and he ended up reading it. Mm-hmm. And it's just so the article quotes directly from him, from his work, and he's essentially saying, and I think this is so important, no matter what persuasion you're from, whether you believe in UFOs or you believe that the extraterrestrials are visiting our world and trying to help us, or you believe that the Urantia book is real, or whether you believe anything, it's important to know this world is at a crossroads. And that's real obvious to me. I don't know if it's so obvious to many others, but it's real obvious to me and to most of the people that I talk to.
I'm sure it's obvious to all truth seekers anyway.
I'm sorry, Don, what'd you say?
I say I'm sure it's obvious to all truth seekers anyway. You know, most of the people on the planet, I think, are probably not ready to graduate, so they aren't inspired to study these things like the Urantia book that we study.
Well, and it's not an easy study. It takes
right.
some work. And I know that if you get involved with, as you have been with MUFON and with that whole movement, there's a lot to cover there. There's a lot of ground to cover there. You know, tremendous amount of material about, you know, and photographs. And I know that they're endlessly trying to debunk this. And that, you know, but the gist of this article that you sent me, the link to the article, was that the universe is trying to get us to a place where they can welcome us back into the family of worlds.
That's right. We have been in quarantine as a planet for 200,000 years, and that quarantine is coming to an end. It comes to an end for some people before the rest of us, because some people are ready before the rest of us, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And there is an extensive underground and undersea system of beings on this planet, and we have bases on the Moon and Mars, and those are people that have become ready to join the Galactic Society before some of the more selfish people on this planet. It's a big society down there.
Go ahead, Crystal.
How does their interaction with us impact our spiritual development?
All I can tell you is that everybody that's been coming to our Truth Seeker meetings, studying, which started out as MUFON meetings, just learning about UFOs and the beings in them, you're kind of guided into a spiritual path when you study that, and particularly when you start listening to the messages that come from the people that are in these flying saucers. They're communicating telepathically. I have a lot of friends who are considered abductees, but they have real friendships with people on board flying saucers. The most important case probably is Billy Meyer in Switzerland, started with frequent connections. He took over 1,000 photographs of 4 different kind of vehicles and had photographs of some of the aliens who were Pleiadian, Semyasi, for example. But the reason he was allowed to take the people these pictures is to draw people's attention to the messages coming from them, the transformational messages that he started getting back in 1975. Very, very important stuff there, the Pleiadian contacts.
Right. I was just going to say, now, he was contacted with the Pleiadians, by the Pleiadians, and he took pictures of them, and there was a beautiful, they're very beautiful people. They're very tall and blonde and absolutely gorgeous.
And they have been our teachers for thousands and thousands of years throughout history.
Well, you know, this is a point that's so important to me because before I ever found the Urantia book, I became absolutely intrigued by some of the research that pointed to the fact that the world has been visited for many thousands and thousands of years and that there's evidence of it.
Yeah.
And
when I was on a tour of Machu Picchu, we sat on the bench overlooking the ruins and stuff, and the local tour guide is telling us about all this advanced agriculture and medicine and astronomy that these Aztecs knew a long time ago. And I asked him, I said, well, where did they get all this information? And, you know, right off, he said, well, they say they got it from the Pleiadians.
Wow.
I mean, that's part of their history, their, you know, culture down there. And there are places, I asked the tour guide, the Manu Nature tour guide that was leading us around, if he had ever seen a UFO, and he says, yeah, there's some communities in the mountains just north of Machu Picchu where these people see flying saucers daily coming and going from the big ice fields up in the mountaintops where humans can't get to. They apparently have a base up there, and they see them all the time. He's seen them.
So what's the big secret, Don? I mean, obviously, if they're here and they're doing this work, they're doing it covertly for now. They're not making it a big... I mean, if they wanted to be known, and I've had friends who've had dreams about the skies full of alien crafts, and I know some people that believe that's going to happen at some point, where there's going to be a disclosure so big and so obvious that no one will be able to deny it. But that hasn't happened yet. So why is this being kept under wraps?
I think the most important reason, and I'm sure there are many, one being the moratorium on advanced technologies until our consciousness gets to where we won't use these advanced technologies to find quicker ways to kill the rest of us. What they're doing is contrary to national laws in every country in the world, but it's accepted and considered necessary by a higher law. You know, when I went to the Cosmic Cultures Conference in 1995 in Washington, where the people, you know, when President Clinton and Hillary and Carl Sagan and UN people were all invited to speak there, they all declined and sent the lawyer. And his message was, you can't take any national law into space. You have to figure out what cosmic or natural laws are, what laws pertain to us out there, to aliens down here, and to human-alien hybrids here, there, and everywhere. Pretty important statement to be in an open conference like that in 1995. And those proceedings are still available if anybody wants to go to headlinebooks.com and click on proceedings. But
can you spell that for us? Because I can't quite hear you.
Headlinebooks.com. And the title of the book starts, okay, Proceedings. It's the only book that starts Proceedings. You can still find that and order it for about $15, I think.
That's the one I wanted you to spell, if you don't mind.
Proceedings?
Proceedings. Is that...
Yeah,
that,
Proceedings,
that
colon,
proceedings?
When Cosmic Cultures Meet.
When Cosmic Cultures Meet, okay.
Is the subtitle.
Okay, thanks.
I'm not
so
sure where I was going with...
Tell us a little bit more about what types of legal or ethical values you think transcend different cultures.
Okay, well, yeah, let me finish this thought about why they can't talk about it. You know, in the Garden of Eden, according to the Urantia book, Adam's plasm was used to impregnate 1,682 women or something. It wasn't just Eve that was carrying all of his children. Because in 900 and some years, they developed a population of nearly 1 million with the upgraded computer. And so now if we have something similar to the Garden of Eden taking place on this planet, which is underground. You can't separate the new species from the more barbarian people on the planet, and some of us still are, with a couple of walls anymore. You have to do it, you know, like underground or on the moon or Mars to get us separated. But they have in their alien computers the family history, I think, of every person on the planet. They have the genetic history of the physical bodies of all eternal spiritual beings on this planet. And they choose, based on genetics, beings to carry, and they choose beings to take the eggs that they use to, and the sperm that they use to splice in certain genes for the upgraded computer. And then they reimplant the eggs, and if they know how, you know, whether this is going to be the full new species or a subspecies that their human mothers can give birth to naturally, they'll let the human mothers raise them if they're going to be accepted by our neighbors. But if they're going to look like the cover of Time magazine, they take them at 3.5 months and raise them in an artificial womb, and we may get to meet them later, but not until our neighbors are ready for it. See what I mean?
Right.
So that's against, you're not allowed to pick up our wives and our daughters and take their eggs and block their memories of what happened most of the time. You could get prosecuted for it. The president could get prosecuted for it if he went on with the treaty that President Eisenhower signed in 1954 with the Zeta Reticulans, allowing them to do this. I mean, Majestic 12 are the ones that called, because President Truman set up Majestic 12. So when Truman left office 5 years later and was replaced by Eisenhower then went on his golf vacation in California, and they picked him up, flew him over to Muroc Lake, where he could have a meeting with these aliens, because MJ-12 wanted him to sign the treaty that allowed American citizens to be picked up by Zetas for the hybridization program, for the upgrade of humanity. And his requirement to them was that, I will agree to this if you will make sure that these people who are used to carry the hybrid children do not remember what happened. You know, you block the memories of it so it doesn't disrupt their life here. That was a requirement by Eisenhower, and that's why you don't hear a whole lot about it.
Okay, so really, then there's an aspect of conspiracy to this.
Absolutely.
That not only has the government known about them, and I've heard this before. This isn't news to me.
No.
I might be news to some of the people. And you've been in this movement for a while, so you've heard this a lot. I've heard it. I don't know if I believe it, by the way, but, you know, it's
put it in your mental hole basket.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me. So that not only did the government know about these visitors, they were actually in agreements with them. And I've heard that they have given our government some of its technology.
Technology we use to go back and forth to the moon and Mars and stuff like that. But that's part of our fourth density society that does that. And they're very strict about not allowing that technology into the third density society where it would be misused.
Okay, so now where the heck did nuclear weapons come from?
That's something that our alien friends have been trying to get us to get rid of for a long time. We came up with that ourselves.
Okay.
That came out of the Manhattan Project. However, Germany was working on it simultaneously, and that's how Bormann and a bunch of other German officers got out of Germany, is they traded their nuclear program for freedom. And they went down to Argentina with, you know, in conspiracy with our world leaders at the time, including Eisenhower. So, the world's a different place than what most people are aware of.
Maybe you can share with our listeners a little bit about Alfred Weber or Webre?
Weber.
Who wrote about
Weber. Yeah, it's been out Weber. Well, he was one of the first.
He wrote about exopolitics, government, and law in the universe.
Yeah, he was one of the first people to get into this subject of exopolitics. I'm not in full agreement with everything he says, but he does some good work. I am an advisor to Dr. Michael Sala's Exopolitics Institute. And they're doing some really good work, too, putting on good conferences. And they have a exopolitics journal. In fact, one of my papers was in the number one issue of the Exopolitics Journal. But you might go online to Exopolitics Institute and see what they're doing. Any serious truth seeker can learn an awful lot about exopolitics from all of Dr. Michael Sala's writings. He was a professor, and I think has clearer papers on different subjects.
And he was the one that was the attorney. Weber was the one that wrote the article, right, Don?
Weber's written a book, and
right.
I must say I haven't read the book. I get his periodic or weekly newsletters, so I've read most everything he's written, Weber, that is. But he doesn't have an advisory board, to my knowledge. I'm on the advisory board of the Exopolitics Institute run by Dr. Michael Sala.
Okay, so
what can you tell us about that, the work that you've done with that group? You said you're an advisor to that organization?
Right. I'm also an advisor to the new International UFO Congress that is putting on weekly conferences now in Phoenix instead of Nevada.
The reason I ask that is that it seems that when we talk about these experiences that people have had, only a percentage of them are very positive. Some of them are very frightening or very negative. And
yeah.
I would just like you to address that for a minute, if you would.
I think the reason some are perceived as negative is because, well, there are a couple of reasons. It's human nature to be afraid of what we don't understand is one. But Zeta Reticulans, due to their own genetic engineering of the past, are not able to express they have dampened their ability to express emotions. And that's one of the things we're giving them in exchange for the upgraded computer. Because the human
now,
built into our genetics.
Now, when you say the upgraded computer,
yeah.
Don, when you say the upgraded computer,
yes.
I know you use a lot of terminology that some of our listeners may not have heard before.
A better and bigger brain.
Yeah, he explained it at the beginning of the show. He said it's like an upgrade.
Yeah, we're getting a bigger hard drive, a faster chip, and a new USB port in our brain. You know, every upgrade of humanity has been an enlarged brain. Okay, that's the biological computer. I'm sorry.
We have a new bunch of people who are listening who weren't on at the very beginning of the show.
Right.
So that's why I wanted you to repeat that.
Right.
So I'm sorry for interrupting. Please go ahead.
Sorry. One of my jobs is to help teach people a vocabulary they can use to discuss what's going on in these transformational issues. So I'm glad you asked if it wasn't clear to everybody, because that's my job, is to help teach them what the difference between a third grade curriculum for planet Earth and a fourth grade curriculum for planet Earth. And the fourth grade curriculum is basically to learn to express unconditional love of others. Although you can break that down into many different I will send out to Paula my synopsis of the last International UFO Congress, where this curriculum is described in more detail. And some of the more important things in this thing I'm going to send out in the next couple of weeks is the called the Gorbachev contacts. This is where a 9-foot-tall alien with a head about the same size as ours and 3 eyes tells Gorbachev who he is, why he's here, and who his son is, and tell him that his indigo son, which you don't find written about in any of the history, except in a book maybe written by an Argentinian that he invited to Moscow for a week to tell him what was going on back in during the Cold War. But his son was a son of Atlas, which I find interesting. But it's because of that interaction with aliens that was backed up by the world press watching a big flying saucer with this 9-foot alien land in Voronezh, Russia, that the Perestroika program happened, the Glasnost program happened, and Gorbachev dedicated the rest of his life to eliminating nuclear weapons from the face of the planet.
Wow.
You know, when you look at the background of these interactions between aliens and humans, they are only allowed to interfere with the free will choices of the human society when leaders are leading their people in the wrong direction.
Well, what are the implications of nuclear weapons for, say, I mean, you've made it clear that they're very concerned about that, and I think there isn't one of us that isn't very concerned about
your
it.
Your answer book readers know that the only extinction of a human soul is supposed to take place in the super universe headquarters. You know, you got to be really incorrigible and fully dedicated to sin before you are considered for extinction as a soul. It doesn't happen very often, in my opinion. However, if a human soul is engulfed in the strong nuclear force of an atomic bomb, it has the capability of disassociating those energies of the soul. That's the only force has the capability of interfering with the soul. And that's what concerns them. Nuclear weapons on this planet affect things off the planet. You have to have a spiritual perspective to understand that.
Okay. All right. And I just had a question on the board, and that's, you know, that's a chilling thought that we humans could even do something like that to ourselves.
And we did that to some of us at Hiroshima.
Yeah. That's a chilling thought.
And they told us in 1983 they were still trying to piece together the souls disassociated in Hiroshima. They're serious about not causing a soul to be extinguished other than through the normal procedure at the super universe headquarters.
Right. Okay, so our friend on the board, Lou, wants to know, didn't the alien predict to Gorbachev the nuclear accident at Chernobyl?
Two beings that appeared to him and described themselves as ascended masters told him he was personally responsible for the nuclear threat to this planet, and they were tired of it, and he must change his ways. And just to make sure he understood they were serious about what he said, they were going to cause an accident to happen at Chernobyl.
Wow.
And that was between the time he took office in March of 85 and the time that Chernobyl happened in April of 86. And Gorbachev, at the time that happened, Reagan was in Europe at a G7 meeting, and Gorbachev called him and said, "We need to talk." And Reagan made an unscheduled stop in Vienna. I know Kissinger was his top advisor and was right on his heels when he went into the room with Gorbachev, and Gorbachev blocked him and said, "No, you can't come in." And Kissinger said in his book, Diplomacy, when Reagan got out of that room, it was obvious he was shook up about something. And he never to this day would tell his top advisor, Kissinger, what he was shook up about. But as soon as Chernobyl happened, Kissinger was in the room when Gorbachev's opening statement was, "I will eliminate all Soviet nuclear weapons now if the United States would do the same." And that's when Reagan said, "We can only go halfway because there are other nations that have them." That started the strategic arms limitation talks, the reduction of atomic weapons.
Okay, now, and I know there are some pretty interesting stories about, explain, well, you know, you've already somewhat explained disclosure and what's happening with disclosure. It's a process of getting us used to the idea that we're not alone in the universe and getting us used to the idea that other planets exist and life forms exist and that they might be coming here and that they might have an effect on us or might have been coming here for quite some time. I saw actually at Crystalline's mom and dad's house, I saw a whole film on disclosure and some pretty powerful testimonies from some retired military men just like you who had some pretty amazing experiences with UFOs. And one that always strikes me is a guy in a missile silo who watched as a UFO came down and disabled every single one of the nuclear missiles in this, restricted area. And, you've probably heard of a lot of this kind of thing before, but, in a way I'm comforted by this because it makes me believe, look, if we ever really got close to launching nukes, they'd shut us down,
I think they would. You know, they took Billy Meyer out to another planet where they were launching missiles with each other and showed Billy Meyer how they have the capability of disintegrating these missiles in the air. They not only shut down our missiles, but they changed the coordinates of the targets on Soviet missiles. When we were sending up Munson launches out of Vandenberg, they sent a flying saucer in to shoot a beam of light across and blow up the missile while it was in flight, showing us that they have that capability. Then the next time they launched a missile, they picked it up out of the perigee after the rocket motor burned out, put it back where it was 3 days later, and it hit the target. They've had a lot of demonstrations to show that what they can do if they want to, and to get us to think that, well, maybe we shouldn't be spending so much money on nuclear weapons. But we can't. They don't want us to depend on them for keeping other people from using nuclear weapons.
Right.
They want us to figure out how to do it ourselves. That's what we're here for, free will choice.
Well, right, and it's our planet. It's our planet.
And Brother, one of our other regulars on the board just mentioned, though, that they didn't stop us dropping 2A bombs during the Second World War.
That's correct. I did not fit in on the higher intelligence decision that allowed them to do that. But those bombs did save a lot of lives in the end run. You know, when I've had Japanese naval officers tell me personally that we Americans saved his life because he was in their naval academy, and his job, if we hadn't dropped that nuclear weapon, was to drive a kamikaze speedboat into our ship, the side of our ships, if we tried to invade Japan.
Okay, so someone just also mentioned nuclear is not the same as atomic. So can you?
Well, nuclear and thermonuclear are all considered the same in my mind when we speak of it. But,
well, what is meant by atomic then? Is that actually truthfully a nuclear weapon?
I think it's talking about the same thing. If you talk about an atomic bomb, the difference between a nuclear weapon and a thermonuclear weapon is that a fusion reaction occurs on a nuclear weapon. In a thermonuclear weapon, it takes the temperatures and pressures generated by the nuclear reaction to start the thermonuclear reaction. The fusion of helium, hydrogen, tritium, and deuterium, and stuff. So
it's by no means natural. No. I wonder, and I'm just speculating here, and I know you probably don't know.
It's natural in the sun, but it's not natural on this planet. Okay.
Okay, so what we're doing is trying to create a sun-like energy on the surface of the planet to...
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, I would venture to say that something like this is pretty unprecedented in the universe of universes. Have you ever heard that from any of your sources?
Well, I think that's why, you know, when you read the book of Waspy, a new Bible published in 1882, it says that there are billions, it was projected 100 years into the future, by the way, billions of angels and aliens here to observe what's going on this planet. And we know from the Rancher book that the life of Jesus, you know, how to live a Christ-like life as a head of household, was the private ministry of Jesus, not just for the people on this planet, but for the people in the whole local universe of Nebadon. You know,
right.
10 million other planets that had not been, had their communication circuits cut off, not suffered from the Lucifer rebellion, were watching his life on this planet and learning from those lessons at the same time. It's a big deal. That's why there's so many people here now assisting and watching what's going on.
So what you mean is that had not had their communication circuits cut?
Yeah, well, I think 37 planets suffered Lucifer rebellion and had their communications, you know, shut off 200,000 years ago.
But the rest of them were able to watch.
The rest of them were all watching. That's
right,
correct.
They were watching. And it was an
and
all...
And still are. And still are. And they're going to be watching his second coming, which I think is it's intuitive, but I think the reason for his second coming is going to be our graduation ceremony.
Wow.
As we are invited back into the Galactic Society and have the communication circuits open to everyone.
Wow. That's an interesting thought.
They've already been open to some of us.
That's a very interesting thought.
I'm glad you think so, because I sure think so.
To me, speculation is fun. I want to make something clear. I don't judge any of this, and I know some people do, Don, and I know that you've probably heard more than once, well, you're just crazy to believe that, you know? But I think that the Urantia book proves to me, if nothing else, the world is more than we know. And
yeah.
there's questions here that we think are not answerable, but they are answerable. And they're not only answerable, they're logical and plausible if we have the missing pieces to the puzzle, which is one of the things that the Urantia book does for me. And it says, it's not saying anything different than what you're saying. You're giving more of an information about maybe how this might occur. The Urantia book doesn't do that, but it says it will occur. It says that we will be welcomed back into the loyal, the loyal universe, the universe that is loyal mm-hmm. to our sovereign creator, Christ Michael, the universe that is loyal to our Heavenly Father, the infinite God at the center of all things, and that we've become out of step. I find it interesting that, my mind is just perking quite a bit from what things that you've said, which always happens when you and I talk. But I find it interesting that you keep mentioning the third grade class, because the Urantia book says we're more than a dispensation behind. So what you're saying is that we're essentially in the third dispensation and we're about to come into the fourth dispensation.
Right,
okay.
And Paula, not only will it occur, it is already occurring for some of us, those who are ready spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, to express unconditional love of others, are having their circuits opened up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have people who communicate regularly with higher intelligence, and they've offered to answer all of my questions, and I feel honored by having those people answer any new question I come up with. It's really kind of neat.
Somebody just made a comment on the board too. And it strikes me, it's Lou again. I'm trying to get Lou to call in. It'd be great if Lou would call in, and I'm
mm-hmm.
sure you've met him. He said, weren't all the planets, including the loyal ones in Satania, isolated? I think that's a good question. Wasn't the whole system isolated?
No, only 37 planets were isolated.
Yeah, only the planets that went into rebellion.
Yeah, but right. Wasn't the whole system cut off from the circuits?
No, I don't think so.
Just the
I
planets?
I don't think so.
Well, that's
no, just the 37
just
planets that rebelled.
There were the planetary prince and the majority of the staff went into rebellion. Those were the planets that were isolated from the universe broadcasts.
Right.
Yeah, I just asked Lou to look it up for us if he can find it. He's quick. He's Mr. Quick Draw on your Ranger book.
Of the staff,
I was fast.
Of the staff of Caligastia, 40 of them remained loyal, and they were taken from the planet to the Constellation headquarters, and the other 60 were restricted to living on the planet without their Tree of Life, which kept their physical bodies from aging. And that's when they were told to go and breed with the daughters of men to get their upgraded genetics into the human system as much as possible 200,000 years ago.
Right.
That was before Adam and Eve were here, but that was one step in our genetic upgrade.
Oh, are you
the Nodites?
The Caligastia 100, the 60 that bred with
I'm talking about the 60 that bred, that elected Nod as their leader, became known as the Nodites you read about in the Bible.
So here's an interesting juxtaposition. Every bad thing that has ever happened to this planet, God can turn into a good thing.
That's right.
Or the other.
You're right.
And even that, you know, you're right. You're right, Don. That was an upgrade of a form, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually heard that created an interesting problem to the universe, and this comes from the Sherman diaries. And one of the things that Sherman was told was that when that happened, it created a hybrid of sorts that is unprecedented, and
mm-hmm.
they didn't quite know what to do with those beings.
Yeah. Well let me continue with some more. Recent ufology.
Okay.
You know, the Rancher book says that when the Adamites, descendants of Adam, with their genes, intermarried with the Nodites, the genes from those 60 specially designed bodies that had the bigger hard drive, faster chip, you know, working on the staff of Caligastia 200,000 years ago, they formed a race that referred to in the Urantia book as Andites, which had some of the greatest capacity for intellectual growth and spiritual awareness on the planet. And there were a lot of people with these genetics that were living in Germany during World War II. And when we were sending in our bombers, British and American bombers, putting them in close formation and firebombing the cities of Germany, causing firestorms that sucked all the oxygen out of the air raid shelters, we were killing off physical bodies that had the greatest capacity for intellectual growth and spiritual awareness on this planet, which was contrary to the genetic upgrade program they were already starting. So that's why the Germans then were allowed to use the flying saucers that they had developed, but had been restricted from using in World War II, to put the benzene in it and spray it in the air ahead of our bomber fleet, which caused an explosive mixture to develop that our bombers flew into and blew a whole bunch of them out of the sky. I think we lost 200 planes on one raid. And so even though Hitler was not allowed to develop the anti-gravity technologies that his scientists were taught by Aldebarans to build, he was allowed to use it in that particular case to keep us from eliminating so many of the best genetics on the planet, 1945.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, you know... What a world. What such a life on such a planet. What a world we live in. I mean, you know, this is all just so amazing to me. You know, I've been talking to another friend who is very much like you, Don. He reminds me a lot of you. And he's been involved with the the UFO community and has followed it very intensely. And I think I told you recently he's learned about some big crafts that have been spotted out in space not far off. And I've seen a lot of other things. It's interesting that the UFO community, when I lectured at the MUFON conference in Mesquite, Nevada, in 1999, I asked the audience. There was about 300 people in the audience. I asked how many of them had, had the Urantia book. I actually asked them how many had the Urantia book, and a full 2/3 of them raised their hand. And I'm sure not that many of them had read it. At that point in time, they weren't that interested in the spiritual information in the Urantia book. But it seems like it's getting that the UFO community is getting more interested in the spiritual aspect. And what I honed in on that conversation was the aspect that these beings that are coming here have the same creator God that we have, and they worship the same God we do.
Right.
Obviously, if they're not in rebellion. If they're in rebellion, they don't. But the loyal beings of the universe all worship the same God, and the loyal beings of the universe of universes, and rebellion is not a normal thing. It's a very unusual thing. And so that was just, that they were taken aback by that a bit. I don't think they expected to hear spiritual things at a UFO conference.
Well,
and I hope that that's happening more and more in the UFO community. And I'm very encouraged by you, because I see that you bring that in. You're bringing that into them.
Well, my first talk at the International UFO Congress was the year 2000, when it had moved down to Laughlin. And the title of my talk was UFOs and the Spiritual Hierarchy. Based upon, I was trying to teach them how to talk about our local universe and the various structures in the spiritual hierarchy there. And I wanted to know how many people there had read the Urantia book, and I asked for a show of hands. There were about 500 in the audience, and only 52 of them that I could count raised their hands and said that they had read it. My question was, have you currently own or have owned a copy of the Urantia book? 52. And then I asked, how many of you have read it carefully from cover to cover? And only 6 people left their hands up. So I talked to a lot of those people who had lowered their hands between the questions and said, why couldn't you get through the whole thing cover to cover? And there were 2 main answers. One is the concepts were just too big to get their mind around. Or they didn't understand so much of the first, they quit in the first 300 pages when they started at the beginning. They didn't understand so much of it that made them feel bad. It was an ego thing. So they picked up a book that made them feel better. That's unfortunate way through. Say again?
Lou is going to give us a call. He said he's on hold. So do you have Lou?
Hi, 512, you're on the air. Hello?
This is Felisa on 512.
Okay.
Okay, sorry.
Lou is 603, Crystalline.
603, you're on the air.
All right, you got it right.
Hello?
Hi, Crystalline. Hi, Paula. Hi, Don.
Hi, Lou.
Hi.
Lou from New Hampshire. I want to jump in here because Don was talking about how the Adamites mated with the Nodites and created the Adamites. This was a plan that the life carriers had long before it actually happened. I'm going to read from the book here. It says, the life carriers had planned a new type of mortal, embracing the union of the conjoint offspring of the prince's staff with the first generation offspring of Adam and Eve. And they had thus projected a plan envisioning a new order of planetary creatures whom they hoped would become the teacher rulers of human society. Such beings were designed for social sovereignty, not civil sovereignty. But since this project almost completely miscarried, we shall never know what an aristocracy of benign leadership and matchless culture Urantia was thus deprived of. For when the corporeal staff later reproduced, it was subsequent to the rebellion and after they had been deprived of their connection with the life currents of the system. So this was actually a plan to have this ruling aristocracy of super people, you know, like the ninth race here of the Adamites plus the corporeal staff. So, Donna, are you saying they're sort of trying to make up for that today with the loss of this potential race with the project?
I think you might put it that way. That's one way to talk about it. But I think that as a fourth-grade student, where everybody incarnated on the planet is here for the same reason, learning to express unconditional love of others, you know, with the ability to join the Galactic Society, you need to be able to think faster, and there are a lot of people that think that the ADHD people just get bored in school because they're capable of thinking so much faster than their teachers are teaching. And you have to be able to absorb more information, and that's why we need the bigger hard drive. But you also have to communicate telepathically. Yeah, it's really exciting to me the upgrades that we're getting, and you look at people. A lot of these HDHD people, when you measure their IQ, it's above 150.
Wow. You know, Don, I remember the last time you were on the show, and it really affected me because I'm going to really stick my neck out here, and I usually don't do this. I've been a reader of the Urantia book for 35, almost 36 years now.
Wow.
And I've had two experiences with ETs, let's call them, I don't know who they are, that involved the hybrid experiment. And I almost never talk about this. I've certainly over the years tried to reconcile what I know were my personal experiences with the teaching of the book. I have never been able to do that. And then I heard you speak, you know, whenever it was, months ago on this very show, and I said, wow, maybe just because it's not explained in the book doesn't mean it didn't happen, you know.
Lou.
I dug up your email address, and I wrote you a letter, and you were very helpful. You sent me some links that were very helpful. But I'm to this day, I'm trying to learn more about this. But you did explain something to me that makes sense about if this hybrid offspring were to look like the cover of Time magazine, then they need to be taken off planet where they can be nurtured and not seen.
Or underground.
Or underground, okay.
Yes.
So they're not seen as so vastly different to the point where they're actually, God, even exterminated in our society.
Yeah.
Yeah, that made a lot of sense.
Then why do you think that is?
Are you jumping at me or Don Kislin?
Pardon me?
I think she addressed you, Lou.
Well, I think Don, I think the way Don explained it, and don't let me put words in your mouth, was that these children, if they wound up looking like the cover of Time magazine, they would need to be isolated lest they be misunderstood or persecuted or something.
Yeah, our neighbors would not accept them. Anybody that's seen the movie Powder can understand that concept.
That's a great movie.
It was a great movie. I like
these Powder. These beings look a lot like Powder, and I don't think that's an accident.
You mean the movie?
Yes, the movie Powder.
Yeah.
Well, there's this theory that much of Hollywood has been slowly, over the decades, acclimating our society to the casual acceptance of aliens and spaceships and everything else.
Yeah. Think about the movie Avatar. It's
right.
Been highly publicized, gotten a lot of excitement going. But there are three concepts that are taught to humanity through the movie Avatar in many languages around the world that I think are very important for us to understand for, you know, the fourth grade classroom. And one of them is the transfer of a soul from one type of physical body to another.
All right.
That concept is very important. The other is the mentality of the military in the 1960s. You know, when our military officers were taken to their planet, by these aliens on their vehicle. They didn't want to be around a bunch of aliens without their guns.
Right.
And the Zetas allowed them, each officer, to take a .45 pistol, and the two security specialists had rifles. And one of the lessons there is when they were exploring the polar regions of the planet Serpo without Zetas around, one of their people was killed by a 15-foot-long snake-like creature, and they shot it, and they killed it. And when the Zetas found out, they got really ticked off. It's a lesson we all should learn. The Zetas said, look, you are an intelligent being. That is an animal. That animal is doing what it's programmed to do. You should have realized that you were in its territory. It was not its fault. You had no right to kill it. Interesting concept.
Right, and that relates to the scene where the soldier kills that animal that was attacking, that he stumbled upon and was attacking him.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there are other things in Avatar that I thought were interesting. Number one, when the colonel, the evil Marine colonel, is lifting weights, he says, you really got to keep in shape on one of these low-gravity planets. And we know from the Urantia book, under the planetary types of mortals, that on a low-gravity planet, the beings can get to 10 or 12 feet tall, and that's exactly what we had on Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was neat that
the flying creatures on Avatar reminded me of Fondors from the Garden of Eden.
Exactly. Yeah,
oh, man.
The Fandors were there, and the fact that this race was blue and the ultimate triumph of a spiritually minded people over a militaristic, materialistic minded race, the ultimate triumph was there.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 to 5 feet taller than the humans they were dealing with.
Yeah, well, that's the gravity types. It was a low-gravity planet, and the Urantia book talks about that, Crystalline, in the planetary type.
Yeah, I realize that, but do they mention that in the movie?
No. Well, they mentioned it's a low-gravity
planet. Did they mention that it was a low-gravity planet?
Only once, when the colonel's lifting weights. I saw the movie 6 times. So I know exactly where it was mentioned. Yeah. It was the only movie I got from Netflix that I didn't return the next day.
Right. Lou, you probably recognize the fact that, well, maybe you haven't read the Serpo.org thing, but what happened on Serpo is that one of the humans died on the ship just before they got there. It took them 11 and a half months to get there, and that was 38.41 light years away. And they wanted to bury this physical body. And the Zetas took the body, and years later they found out that the Zetas used the genes in that body for, you know, their genetic engineering stuff. The genes are the most important things that we have on this planet. You know, our life carriers went to great, great efforts to design a pretty neat physical machine, so to speak, or vehicle, so to speak, for the soul. And that concept, I think, is going to get into the consciousness of people that watch Avatar, the fact that our genes are important. The physical body is...
So the dead body was actually a gift to the Serpians, in that sense.
We also have another caller on the air.
Okay,
but I don't want you to stop your train of thought.
No, I'll be quiet. Go ahead, Christine.
Okay, hold on. 831, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm
Hello?
Just listening in. Hi, I'm just listening in.
Oh, okay. All right.
Great.
On.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Well,
okay,
Paula,
go on then, Lou.
Paula, I have one more item I'd like to mention before we run out of time.
Okay, and I have an important one, too, about those local planets that are in rebellion, so don't let me forget about that, but go ahead.
Okay, and I wanted to give people the email address, seagods@shaw.ca.
The letter C?
Seagods, S-E-A-G-O-D-S. S-E-A-G-O-D-S at shaw.ca, shaw.ca.
Okay.
That's Valerie Bonwick's email address, and she is the only source for the books, The Sea Gods After Atlantis and Teachings of the Sea Gods. And my latest lecture was at a metaphysical festival here near Fort Walton Beach, where I shared about 50 minutes of that information. And one of the main teachings of the sea gods is that during this next age, they refer to the current age as the Aryan age, as we're going into the next age, which is the golden age, is to activate our mid-crown chakra, or chalice chakra, they call it, and the edge of aura chakra, which is, they call the pinnacle chakra. This is going to be a major mission for the golden age, for us to work on spiritually. And, you know, in that book, it tells how the, quote, lords of Shambhala were the teachers for those spiritually oriented leftovers from the Atlantean society that decided to stay on the planet. And it gives us much more insight into interactions in the spiritual world throughout our history. It talks about the Lemurian society and the Atlantean society and the society we're going into a bit. And it also, you know, the Urantia book mentions briefly, I think, Lemurian society and Atlantean society, but it doesn't talk about two ages before that, going back to, they call it the Polarian and the Hyperborean age, which goes back to the Earth traumas we had when the dinosaurs, started dying out about 65 million years ago. And, you know, anybody interested in history ought to read that book because there are a lot of dots you connect between these books and the Urantia book. You know, back in the 1930s, those very smart people with PhDs in Dr. Sadler's True Seeker meeting were offered to ask whatever questions they had. They just didn't have many questions about UFOs and aliens back in the 1930s. That's
right.
One of the reasons that I think you don't have a lot of stuff about that in the Urantia book.
Well, let me ask you this, John. It's been said in the world of UFOs that they really started making a lot of appearances, really proliferated their presence when nuclear weapons were being developed and over nuclear facilities. So I have a second part to this question. Is that really when it all began, or like this show that's on history right now called the Ancient Aliens, or have they been really here around for a long time?
They've been here around for a long time, but there's certain things that cause them to be seen. The reason most people see UFOs is because they're involved in the hybridization program, but at the insistence of our government, they have blocked the memories of that. So most of them don't talk about that. Those memories are blocked with the hypnotic process by the Zetas or other beings. And so hypnosis can be used to unblock those memories. But as far as the nuclear issue goes, they wanted us to be aware of those UFO sightings over the nuclear facilities. And that's why they didn't block anybody's memory of what happened there. Does that make sense?
It does. And let me ask you this. Would we all lull ourselves into a false sense of security to think that every nuclear warhead has been deactivated by these people?
I don't think that's true.
Okay. But they have the capability of doing that because of this ability to destroy. Souls.
Yeah, they have demonstrated they have the capability to do whatever they want to concerning our nuclear weapons.
Okay, so let's, and here's a thought. Here's a thought for our reader, or for our listeners, and for you guys and everyone on the board. I really believe they've been coming here. I find the evidence of it, which is all over the world, very compelling. And, if they wanted to harm us, I believe they would have done it long before now.
Absolutely.
why would they wait until we were reaching an age of technology where we could actually mount a defense and then try to take us over? Doesn't make any sense. They could have done it long ago. The point is they're not allowed to do it. If they're loyal to the universe, if they're loyal to our creator son, Michael of Nebadon, if they're loyal to God, they don't interfere with the outworkings of a planet's evolution and a race's evolution, which, you know, it's rumored that Gene Roddenberry read the Urantia book and was inspired to create the idea of the Prime Directive in Star Trek from that teaching in the Urantia book that says, you know, they just don't let it happen. It doesn't happen. It's not allowed. And that's universal law. Okay, so let's suppose that somebody is operating outside of universal law and they're a rebel to universal law. Could they come here and do damage then? Could they come here with malintent, Don? That's my question.
My answer to that is no, because the Ashtar Command is the local police force of the solar system. And one of their jobs is to make sure that all those different aliens, from those billions of aliens and angels from wherever, don't violate galactic law.
Ah.
And the Prime Directive is one of those major things of galactic law. They're not allowed to interfere with the free will choice of the lesser evolved species.
Okay, so even supposing that one of those other 37 worlds that is in rebellion in this system, in this local system of worlds, were to have a technology where they could, you know, come here, they wouldn't be allowed to.
That's correct. Now, maybe this is easier for me to understand than most people, because a psychic told me that in my most recent past life, I used to work for Ashtar.
Ah.
Now, I do know a lot of people who are absolutely convinced, and it's convincing in the stuff that they read, that they had a lifetime in, you know, on another planet, before the immediate past life on another planet. And they're here now to assist planet Earth in this very stressful and traumatic transformation that we're in the middle of. In fact, the one that is local here, that has offered to answer all of my questions through her Zeta friend, was told that she spent her last lifetime in a Zeta physical body, and she visited that same planet that our officers visited on in Serpo in her last incarnation. Small universe, isn't it?
Well, it is, and you know, I don't have any problem believing that that the universe I know because of the Urantia book,
right?
And the angels that I've fallen in love with, and the big brothers and sisters in this universe that I've come to know, the Melchizedeks and the Lenonendeks and the Varanadeks and the archangels, and of course our beloved midwayers that are right here on the planet with us, and Michael himself and Gabriel. And all of the local universe sons and daughters of God are working for us.
Yes.
Because we are the proverbial lost sheep. And as Jesus said, doesn't the shepherd leave the 99 and go out in search of that one, that lost one, to do
yes.
everything he can to restore that lost one to the fold? And any person who's ever had a child, and if you have, you know, more than one child, and you have one child that just seems to struggle and just can't seem to get with the program and is in danger of losing their way, don't you give that child more attention than maybe you give the other children, because they don't need as much. And of course you do. You focus on that child and you give that child all that child needs, because you want that child to survive. You want that child to make it. And I feel that love coming towards our planet from the universe. I feel it in every way. And it gets lonely down here, and it gets hard down here. And, you know, but we have to tap into the energy of the love that's coming in and trying to help us find our way. We're not lost. We never have been. And, you know, it's like that story, and I've shared it before, of Jesus and Ganad, you know, restoring the lost child to his mother. And, you know, where Jesus says, you know, Ganad, most humans are like the lost child. I'll read it to you. It's just so touching. It's from the Jesus Papers. But this is our planet. We are the lost child. Here in Rome occurred that touching incident in which a creator of a universe spent several hours restoring a lost child to his anxious mother. This little boy had wandered away from his home, and Jesus found him crying in distress. He and Ganad were on their way to the libraries, but they devoted themselves to getting the child back home. Ganad never forgot Jesus' comment, "You know, Ganad, most human beings are like the lost child. They spend much of their time crying in fear and suffering in sorrow when, in very truth, they are but a short distance from safety and security, even as this child was only a little way from home. And all those who know the way of truth and enjoy the assurance of knowing God should esteem it a privilege, not a duty, to offer guidance to their fellows in their efforts to find the satisfactions of living. Did we not supremely enjoy this ministry of restoring the child to his mother? So do all of those who lead men to God experience the supreme satisfaction of human service." You know, this kind of service is supreme in the universe. They're bringing us back to the Father. They're bringing us back to God. And I have to believe that every good thing is working towards this goal. And, you know, yeah, we're at a crossroads. We're at a transition stage, and it's going to be difficult. It's going to be painful because a lot of humans are going to be scared.
Yeah. Anytime you make major changes in your worldview, it's very stressful.
It's very stressful, yeah. And, you know, some people think that the world is going to go through some major catastrophic changes. Is that, do you hold to that, Don?
In the book, Teachings of the Descendants of Atlantis or Teachings of the Sea Gods, it describes six ages. And every time when you went from one age to the next age, whether it's from Lemurian age to the Atlantean age or the Atlantean age to the Aryan age, you have always had some earth traumas. And I think we're due for some earth traumas between this age and the next, the Golden Age. I think it will thin out the population of the planet, which could be a blessing. And I'm told that if we choose, you know, in our consultations while we sleep, which I'm sure we probably do most every night with our spirit guides, to keep our current physical bodies through whatever earth traumas might take place, we will be guided to be into a relatively safe place. And if not, we will experience some kind of rapture. And that rapture comes in two forms that I'm aware of. One is to be beamed up like Scotty does on Star Trek, and the other is being pulled up a blue beam like Jesus was in the presence of three other people last time he left, I think. So, you know, I have hope, and I fully intend to keep my current physical body. I'm 75 now, and I plan to be here to live to 100 because of all the interesting things that are going to happen in the next 25 years. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, I am too. And I have faith. You know, somebody from the UFO community told me recently, don't get in the wrong ship.
I have no fear that was going to happen.
Go ahead.
I have a strong sense. I was just going to say, I have a really strong sense that one of the reasons that we're seeing sort of a economic breakdown is the fact that our society has had sort of an easy time of it compared to people in many other parts of the world. And just the fact that we sort of need to get weaned from this real materialistic addiction that we have to so much stuff and new stuff all the time, and, you know, keeping up with the latest technology or keeping up with, you know, the new car, the new fashion, the new and bigger house.
Yeah, Kristen, I like the word addiction, because I think it is an addiction to stuff that a lot of us have. But I don't think the people that have those addictions are among the more spiritually oriented folks, because a lot of the people I know, the people that come to our Truth Seeker meetings, are giving up their stuff, and they're realizing that it's other things that are more important than stuff.
Well, stuff,
I think so.
Stuff doesn't do it for you in the end. I mean, you know, stuff has its day. Our days are numbered. You know, I mean, it's temporal at best.
In fact, I know people who worked in the underground system, and they tell me that they don't have a money system down there. It's like, you know, when I was a young airman or young enlisted officer, officer on a military base overseas, all of your needs are provided. There's hardly any use for money. In fact, when we were in Libya, the only money we had was called funny money, because they didn't want U.S. money to be in the community. But I think everybody will have a job, and they will do it willingly, and they won't use everybody's needs will be provided. I doubt they use moon dollars on our bases on the moon.
Well, dollars are an interesting thing, you know, little pieces of paper that become all important. Little pieces of paper, that's all they are. Little pieces of paper. And, you know, it's just interesting how we would pin so much on that, that, like, it has so much value, these little pieces of paper. But it's what we choose, I guess. But I think about God's economy and how the universe operates.
Can I just make a question in here to Don here?
Sure, Lou, go right ahead. Sure.
Don, regarding the rapture that you were talking about,
yes.
Many of your ancient readers have read the part about the planetary evacuation of a doomed planet. And they say that could be the technique of the rapture. What do you think of that?
I don't recall the specifics of that evacuation.
It's in the paper called The Arrival of Adam and Eve, how the dematerialization technique allows them to be here, but there's no technique to remove an Adam and Eve unless the entire planet is to be emptied. And then they go on to explain that should the physical planet be endangered by an asteroid or nuclear war or rising oceans or whatever, you know, chemical warfare, once a human race has been established on a planet, the race must continue irrespective of the fate of the planet. So they evacuate these, quote, salvageable population. And this is the term that relates to the Christian rapture. They evacuate the salvageable population to another world.
Right.
And I was just wondering if that jives with a definition of
that's my reality. Now, Paula mentioned Gene Roddenberry before.
Right.
And the late Wendell Stevens, who recently died at 87, was the most knowledgeable person I know in this field. Had breakfast with Gene when they were both lecturing at a conference many years ago, and he said, Gene, where do you get the storylines for the Star Trek series? And Gene said, I get them about 2 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes it comes faster than I can write. So when I wake up, I've got the outline. All I got to do is flesh it out. Gene Roddenberry was used to teach humanity about the larger reality out there through the Star Trek series so that we would be better able to join that society when the time came. That's my belief.
Right.
Well, and that back to where we were saying maybe Hollywood is used as a precursor to some of these calming events.
And right now. And back to his question, in 1978, there was an event, some people refer to it as a war, at Fort Benning in Georgia, where big flying saucers are coming up and beaming up in the morning gatherings, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning when all these enlisted people in training were lined up on the parade ground. They were beaming up whole, you know, companies and larger groups of young soldiers. And that ticked off the generals, and they started shooting at these alien vehicles, and they lost that war. So, they've demonstrated the capability of picking up through this beaming up process large numbers of people at the same time.
Well, and I have one more quick question. It's going back to what you were saying about Reagan and Gorbachev. I've heard it said that Star Wars defense was more to stop the intervention of the extraterrestrials than it was to stop nuclear missiles. Have you ever heard that?
I have heard that, but I do not think it is true. As a military officer in the headquarters in Europe, I was somewhat related to the Star Wars program, and I got none of that inkling of any of that kind of thing from official information with a top secret clearance in the Air Force.
Wow, and so
I think somebody is spreading some misinformation with that statement.
Okay, you have told me, which is, very comforting to me, that you believe that the shadow government, as some have called it, is really not in league with the Prince of Darkness, but is actually in league with the forces of light and trying to help us. Is that did I understand?
That is my belief, and the evidence of that is absolutely overwhelming.
Wow.
Now there may be some people who are in some fairly high places, but in the U.S. government, for example, the top 40 people are going to be members of the Council on Foreign in any administration are going to be members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, every one of those 40 people may not be a fourth density soul, but they are all in a position to help carry out the goals of the fourth density organization, the Council on Foreign Relations. And some people see that they are doing some things that in the United States, that's the U.S. branch of the world government, they're doing things that are not in the best interest of U.S. citizens, but they are in the best interest of the world.
Okay.
Those top 40 people wear two hats. They wear a U.S. hat and they wear a world hat. And they have to make some really tough choices. And sometimes their choices favor the world population over the U.S. population. And it ticks us off when they move jobs from first world countries to third world countries. But there are so many people who are eternal spiritual beings in their physical bodies for the purpose of making free will choices that polarize their soul toward service to others or service to self, that can't do that. It's a catch-22 because every choice they make is where their next meal is coming from. They're on the verge of starvation.
Right.
And that's why jobs are being moved into those countries. It's spiritually related, and our government can't talk about that.
We're becoming more of a global, like it or not. And
yes.
The wealth is being redistributed, like it or not. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
The world is getting smaller, the universe is getting smaller, and it's a joint human-alien-angelic project.
Wow, okay. Hey, that's a perfect place to leave it, I guess, you guys, don't you?
we are getting to the end of the show.
It goes by so fast.
We only have a few more minutes. Is there any final words you'd like to say, Don, before we end the program on that note?
I just hope we can encourage more people to become serious truth seekers, and those who are Urantia Book students, encourage them to broaden their seek search for truth into other sources. There are lots of new sources out there that go beyond what the questions were asked in the mid-30s. You know, there's been a lot of stuff happened in the last 75 years. So yeah, know that your answer book as good as you can, and I highly recommend anybody that has the capability to host a Your Answer Book study group. It's a very tough book to get through individually, but you can enter a study group anytime. You know, whatever paper you're on, I like going through it, you know, using the audio disc myself because people aren't embarrassed by their pronunciation when new people come in. And it's just a good way. I really think that 1 million people at least need to have the Your Answer Book and be teaching it, you know, before stuff really starts to shift. And what are we up to, 650,000 now?
John,
you
throw out
way
the
to
number
go.
As if it's a tipping point. You throw right. out that 1 million number as if it's a tipping point.
Yeah.
Yep. So I want to encourage every Urantia student to carry copies. You know, send Paula your credit card number and tell her, send me a box of 10 books and carry some in your car because other people's spirit guides will be guide them to you to get a hold of that book. And you can sell them for cost, $13. We need to get more of those books into the hands of people who would use it.
Well, I'll tell you this, just to back that up. Within the last 6 months, the tiny state of New Hampshire has 3 new study groups, giving it a total of 4. And my sense is, Don, is that there is indeed an acceleration and a proliferation of study groups worldwide right now.
Well, I've probably sold 100 of them out of the back of my trunk. And at our last metaphysical festival, we sold 43 Your Answer Books out to the 700 people that appeared. The year before, we sold 42 to the 750 people that appeared. So, you know, a fair percentage of the people in this generally small, you know, low-populated area of Florida own that book, and that's good.
Yep, that's good. The Your Answer Book is just all around good news. If you want to hear the good news, that's where you'll find it. And,
well,
Don,
Paul,
thank you so much. Go ahead, Lou.
I was just going to say, Paul, I'm glad you badgered me into calling in today.
I am so glad you called in. You know what? I would have loved to hear your story, and I hope you'll share that with us sometime.
Privately, maybe, not on the radio.
Okay. Privately, I'd love to hear it. I absolutely would. But thanks for having the courage to say that you have had that experience. That, you know, Don, I think of anybody could appreciate how much courage it takes to say that. And
Paul, I don't mind if you put my email address on your website in case people that are listening have specific questions for me. I might be able to reply with a paper or two very easily.
I already put your site,
okay.
And we did post it. The one that's on the right now is the...
That's my website. It's hard to find my email address from the website.
Okay, well, give me your email.
You can put my email address, you know, donware@embarkmail.com if you want.
Okay, donware@embarkmail. Yep, got it.
.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Okay, all right.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the air today and all of our listeners. We had a lot of guests on the program today, and we hope you'll join us next week and every Saturday morning from 10 until noon Mountain Time. And Paula, you might not be with us next week.
No,
I'll be on the air with another co-host, most likely. And have a wonderful week until we see you again. Thanks.
Keep it interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless.
Good talking with both of you.
God bless you all.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.